It's a real pleasure to welcome back Bob Hoy, the institutional advisor, advising institutional clients now for several decades. And he, like myself and so many of the listeners, really enjoys classic automobiles. And I understand you might just be interested in that today, Bob.
Oh, yeah. I would just reminiscing over some of the cars I've had, but until this year, I had three 1960s Alfa Romeos, a 1962 Spider, which is the convertible, and then a 63 Sprint Coupe, which obviously is a coupe, and a 67 Giulia Super, which is the sports sedan, which are outstanding cars. And because I'm getting older, but still any old car needs a little attention from time to time, so I sold the last of them earlier in this year. I'm looking at the new Alfa Romeo Giulia, which looks like an outstanding car. So always some attention out there on old cars. It's just, well, actually the new Alfa looks pretty good to me as well. So,
you know, I think a big part of this, I mean, it's my suspicion, the reason why we gravitate towards antiques and classics, it is a conduit for our favorite memories, like that song when you were married, or that song when you graduated from high school earlier days. One of the reasons why we love those vehicles and music for that matter, or any antique, is that it just simply sort of allows us to time travel to maybe simpler times. And let's not reminisce too much, though, because the past was rarely as rosy as sometimes we see through those rose-colored glasses.
Chris, the memory enhanced what was the past. On the good side, and fortunately the memory had the tendency to shed out some of the not so good side. We're making memories here every day.
That is a great segue, I think, into some of the things I'd like to talk about today. Before we move on, I would like to share, I've already shared this with my subscribers, who obviously, because they're my paid subscribers, already privy to this information. It's on the Alpha Stocks newsletter, but I don't know if you're familiar with Tim Draper. He's, anyone who's big in Silicon Valley knows that Tim Draper is, he's the big self-made billionaire out there, and big venture capitalist, started his own university, and said that Bitcoin, you know, around $100 to $200 was going to $100,000 by 2018. We see a, could be a remarkable opportunity to get involved in one of his few babies. Because, you know, these venture capitalists, they don't just throw money around. They have sources. They do their due diligence. They will run through, just like Warren Buffett, 100 business plans or ICOs before they pick one. And he got very excited last year on an ICO, and it's called Tezos. I won't get into the interesting platform, but it really has the potential to disrupt an entire industry. It's heavily involved with Ethereum. It just shot up to, well, in the futures trading, there is a futures contract heavily traded on this Tezos ICO with 100-to-1 leverage. You can go into BitMEX and buy or sell Tezos right now for literally pennies on the dollar. By one contract, you could probably buy 100 with just $50. Participate in this ICO, even though you've missed the ICO, and it's exactly 50% off yesterday's high. So again, this is not trading advice. I am not a registered advisor. In fact, please do not construe this as investing advice or a promotion, but I just wanted to let people know that I am pushing some more chips in. And at HitBTC or at BitMEX, you can get involved with these futures. Of course, highly speculative, but if you believe like I do, and that's the only reason that really drew me into the project in the first place, that Tim Draper in his particular niche is the Warren Buffett of Silicon Valley, which he has proved, saying this is the first company since Ethereum he's gotten involved in. And we all know that Ethereum's up, I don't know how many, a half a million fold. Bitcoin, incidentally, recently eclipsed the 1 million fold increase from one penny. Bob, what are your thoughts on Elliott Wave? Are you like us and believe that it has some merits?
You know, we've been doing research into the financial markets for almost 40 years. You look for what works historically. Then you have some that you think work best for you. Now, Elliott is out there, and it was based upon the original, you know, guys who were doing the research work in there, and they saw basic patterns that could repeat, and they worked them into, I guess, basically a five-wave theory. And we maybe would have done a few charts, and then finally decided that there was too much room for interpretation in that approach. Some people find it valid, but we don't really use it, so. other technical tools.
And your outlook on 2018, please.
2017 is a year where the bull market has quite obviously extended for stocks. The bull market in low-grade bonds extended to recently. And I would add that both are bubbles. If go back to October the 4th, when and looking at the developments in the markets, and that typically September, October, if it's going to be a dismal market, it'll appear then, and it wasn't. So that's where then we began to write that even the Dow Jones Industrial Average will become bubbled, and it has. So then in writing that on October 4th, I noted that when you get into a bubble mode in anything, whether it's a metal or crude oil in 2008 or stocks or whatever, these things go until they blow up. And there's no way really of being able to determine ahead of time when it may blow up, other than sometimes there's seasonality. There's certainly seasonality to crashes. They usually appear in the fall. So anyways, on this one, we look back in history as to when there were big speculations and they concluded like at the turn of the year, December, January. So we can go back to 1973 in the stock market where a very big top came in on January the 11th. And then the worst bear market since the 30s followed. Then we move ahead to gold and silver in 1980. And that one concluded on January 21st. And I just actually refreshed my memory on silver. And it did a triple from a down dip in November of 79 to the high in on January the 11th, that was at $48. And if you had been in the markets for some time, you would have had a recollection that silver had spent a whole lot of time, like a dollar and a half. So suddenly seeing it go from 15 to 48 was absolutely astounding. And then the other one that concluded at the turn of the year was the great Nikkei Tokyo bubble. That concluded in the last trading day of 1989, and that was another one. So this is not to say that this speculative fury now is going to conclude then. All it does is say that this bubble will run until it blows up, and that previous great speculations have concluded in January. So who knows? There's still a number of weeks left on this. That is the thing to understand, that the market history is recording an incredibly huge financial bubble that includes the bond market and the stock markets. And then within that, there are side features such as the Bitcoin. The Bitcoin is very, very huge in price change. But the really big bubbles have been in the bond market, and are now the stock market, the one that's still going. And as we all know, bubbles do not run forever. Now, Chris, there's a couple of items that one's research comes up with, and the end of the bubble will be anticipated by changes in the credit markets, i.e. the yield curve and credit spreads. And they are, let's say the spreads are no longer positive. The yield curve and rising short rates are positive for speculation. But when these begin to change, then the next step is, yeah, you can get a change in the credit markets. But if you look at the first part of 2000, when the dot-com bubble blew out, the change in the credit spreads was just 4 or 5 weeks before the actual high in that fateful March. Whereas in 2007, the change in the credit markets had completed in by August, and then that high was, what was it, Chris, October the 12th on the S&P. So the credit markets will lead it, but you're uncertain as to how long a lead it'll be. But as to whether it's a mania, unbelievable. And, of course, very exciting. Valuations are anything that the brokerage community can determine. The stock analyst's job now is to make stocks look cheap, and because people want to buy them and they want to be justified. But an evaluation that I like to see is the one where you take the S&P and divide it into by the average wage of U.S. from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that now is higher than reached in 2007. Let's recall some numbers. Let's say it's around 116 now. In 2007, I think it was, let's say, 98. And in 2000, that was a straight-up mania. It was, let's say, 105 or something like that. So, as I say, this valuation measure, which I think cannot be corrupted, is the highest it's been, even higher than in 2000. So that one has to be put into everybody's consideration. And then the other is just the question about how long it can run. You know, you've got margin, New York Stock Exchange margin outstanding numbers, and the latest have been for October. That was straight up. Then the next one, there's always quite a lag, but even with the New York Stock Exchange margin, when it has its first couple of months of downtick, the stock market can still peak after that. So there's a number of things, Chris, that we would look that would anticipate the end of this speculation. Not quite there. Things are still positive. And even then, when the when these important indicators reverse, then the speculation could be after that somewhat. So it's a fascinating time, sir. I mean, I'm actually loving it. It is so historically big.
You know, I think that just encapsulates it, doesn't it? Firstly, it's the bubble financially, but then let's bifurcate into two bubbles. One, Bitcoin, clearly a bubble. I cannot argue that. And then equities, just both two of the most amazing, remarkable bubbles. While I do agree with your technical view that the RSIs are off the charts, share some interesting statistics. We just recently eclipsed the total value of Walmart, calling that as prima facie evidence that the top is in. This is it. It's the end of Bitcoin. I have a different view here, and I'm using other metrics. We won't go into Metcalfe's law, which we've talked about before. If you look at Coinbase, arguably the most popular Bitcoin brokerage in the United States, we were seeing as many as a few thousand new accounts per day. Then it reached 60,000 on average per day. And then it crossed in one weekend well over 100,000 new accounts in a day around Thanksgiving. And see, I think there's quite a lot of FOMO here, fear of missing out. And we're coming up on the holidays, so you'll see maybe a spike up after people are done with their figgy pudding and their eggnog. I think a lot of the talk around the Christmas meal table, if you will be how Junior in the basement just eclipsed his wealthy parents' retirement IRA account using his GPUs and other devices, you know, happened to buy 10 or 20 Bitcoin, and now he can buy the neighborhood that they live in, even though he's still living in the basement. We could go into the ramifications of that later, how that will transform society in the next few years. In 2010, the first transaction with Bitcoin was for 10,000 Bitcoin for two pizzas. Said, if you will pay to have two pizzas delivered to my house, you can have 10,000 Bitcoin. Let's look at a couple of counter arguments to the bears at this point and just note a couple of interesting metrics. Firstly, we have a fascinating thing occurring, the number of new folks pouring in and piling in. We believe this trend will persist for the next 3 months. That is until tax season overruns it. So you could still see some parabolic moves. Next, I would note Bitcoin itself is still only around $300 billion, so Walmart's market cap may sound very large, but many estimates are expecting that to grow to $1 trillion, even $5 trillion or more. So let's just take in a conservative $3 trillion mark. I mean, that would put Bitcoin at roughly $150,000 to $200,000 per coin, let's say by 2020. Given the current statistics, it costs about $1,500 to mine a Bitcoin. And I can attest to that because, Bob, we're mining Bitcoin right now. on this computer, Zencash, Zcash, Bitcoin Gold, and Z Classic. Well, it's a little noisier in the background. Take the number of people in the world who we believe will purchase Bitcoin in the next 2 years, which is comes out to only about 500 million in total. And you multiply it by the current price of around $1,500 to mine per coin. And then you divide by the very small 10 million potential float, although I think it's much lower than that. You get a $70,000 current intrinsic value for Bitcoin. GBTC, the ETF, just shot to 2,700, and that's calling for 27,000. Let's say in 2018 we have deeply slowed momentum in the ascent of Bitcoin, the remarkable ascent of Bitcoin. But that doesn't mean it's not 1998 or 1999 NASDAQ, which means you could still have another 100% or 2 or 3 or 4 or 500%. Let's say we just slow to a five-fold increase. Well, that puts you right around 100,000 by the end of 2018. And then the other interesting aspect here that I don't think many people are looking into yet, institutional interest, according to Mike Novogratz, who I'm sure you've been following, he's a rather brilliant VC. He switched over from Wall Street, where he made his fortune, and now every dip he buys as many hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. The institutions are coming. They've only just started. Let's say it takes the institutions about 2 to 3 more months to get their position. Then guess who comes after the institutions? And no one would know better than the institutional advisors. But there's only 16.7 million shares, let's call them, of Bitcoin outstanding. It's much lower than that because millions have been lost. And this thing we call dust, where there's just a few hundred or thousand Satoshi, you can't even get it out of a wallet. Wallets blow up, you lose passwords, encryption fails, computers fail, hard drives fail, phones get lost, private keys are compromised and lost and forgotten and deleted. Estimate right now there's probably not 10 million out there, with only about 1,000 people or wallets holding 90% of those remaining Bitcoin that are available out there. It is a constrained supply. Unlike Walmart, which can issue as much capital shares, a capital stock, as it wishes. Could you imagine what the price, for instance, of Google, Amazon, Netflix, Microsoft, any of those would be right now, Bob, if there were only 5 or 10 million shares outstanding? If you were to get involved in an IPO, there was two to choose from. Equal fundamentals, strong track record. One had 80 million shares that it was offering to the public, and the other had 5 or 10 million. Obviously, the choice is self-evident. Given two opportunities, if there's less supply, you're talking about the potential for astronomical growth.
You know, my view on the blockchain currency thing is that ultimately, with this great reform that's going on in politics, where the public are taking over their government from bureaucrats, you know, it's the government by the people again. Well, that will be matched with the demand by the public for a sound currency, one that can't be corrupted by intellectuals or central bankers. And that will come out of this fervor that's going on now. Now, also, I'm going to tap into my memory when I was a broker in 1967-68. And the stocks were the Nifty 50, the big 50 stocks. Most of them are dead or gone by now. But here was the story on the stock market then, as the hitherto institutions such as life companies and casualty insurers and something like that would mainly be buying fixed income stuff. But the story in the 1968 bull market was that the institutions were going to be buying equities. And then, of course, with that was that institutions were so profoundly wise that this was it. Stocks were going to go up forever. Well, if you took the Dow Jones and deflate it by the CPI, that was the high. And it gave up something like 67%. By the time you got to the bottom in 1982. So if the fact that the instant...
I have a slightly competing view. From my perspective, I can't tell you how many times just in the last few days and weeks, the pundits that I always use as a counter indicator have called a top on Bitcoin and stocks. We have now reached, I'm waiting to see a rollover, a new high fail in U.S. equities, which we have never even come close to now in a whole street year, and then see a consolidation failure.
We don't know, all we know is that this bubble will run until it blows up. And as again, I'm going to repeat myself, that the changes in the credit markets will precede that blow up. And there'll be nothing that the central bank can do about it. And it won't even depend on the Fed raising or lowering the administered rate. It has nothing to do with it. It'll just, it really is, when the last guy's in, that's it. But at least we have a handle on what will precede the top. Now, as to whether it, you won't know, at least for a few more months yet, it depends on how straight up it goes. Spike is going to be followed by a straight down, isn't it? But then various sectors within this could peak at different times, in which case, if you look at the whole stock market by sector, you then may have a big rounded top on all of it, because not all sectors peak at the same time. So to me, being a financial historian, this next few months, Chris, will be just the most fascinating period to be alert and vertical and watching, and the financial history being written as we go along. And I would also say that what I read about the central bank community and the financial commentators who seriously think they're commentating on central banking, this is going to be fascinating too, because when I said that the public will demand a sound currency, and they will also get rid of the central bankers and their absolutely bizarre theories. Can you imagine the audacity of these guys?
It's much worse than that. Our policymakers, they have collectively decided, and I am so, so grateful to them for this, to collectively stick their ostrich heads, which I think is being generous here, into the sand. And by doing so, have presented such an opportunity, handed it to be a central banker. I'm printing right here on this machine, but I'm printing money with the full backing of the Federal Reserve of the United States and the U.S. Treasury. I have their support and their backing because, and I quote, the currency that I am printing right now and keeping the lights on here, according to them, is not a currency. They actually believe that a worthless fiat piece of paper is actual money, even though it can be printed without any measure whatsoever. Are you still somewhat down on gold and silver?
No, actually, last week we came out with both gold and silver, particularly silver, were technically oversold. That was on momentum, and also our sequential buy came in. So we're on the positive side for the precious metals, without being at the same time negative on the U.S. dollar. It's acting okay. So, but you could have a condition whereby, well, if we go into a panic, the serious money, I mean, the really careful serious money goes to liquidity. It doesn't care for return other than the return of their funds. The most liquid items are short-dated U.S. Treasuries and gold. So if you've got a huge increase in investment demand for gold, you got a bid for it. But if you're sitting in U.S. dollars and there's an equal or somewhat, you know, another huge bid for U.S. Treasury bills, is the price of gold going to go up in U.S. dollars? Not much. But my history says that once this bubble, the stock and bond bubble, is over, then the real price of gold goes up and the mining side makes money. Every great post-bubble contraction, the feature game has been gold mining. We could see some of that in the new year. So, but as to the collapse of the U.S. dollar, no, the world needs a common currency to settle in. And if you're going to have a continuation of the popular uprising, the extension of the state will be curbed. And the state has been funded by a perpetual motion machine called inflation and bubbles. So if you have a collapse of the financial bubble, the state can no longer fund itself, which is a good thing. I'm looking for a steady dollar into the new year, quite a bit in, and the probability of a new bull market for the real price of gold which will then prompt a new bull market for the equities.
Bob Hoy, Institutional Advisors, we want to wish you, of course, a happy holidays and a Merry Christmas. And as we wrap up, please tell people more about the Institutional Advisors.
Yep, you can find us at institutionaladvisors.com or just Google my name, Bob Hoy, and it all comes up. You can get in, look at our website, trial subscriptions, the whole thing. And also, there's some, I must say, over the decades, we've got some rather amusing articles in there. So,
Bob Hoy, I have to apologize. I have to run.
Yep, good to be with you.